Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is October 20th, 2016, and I am joined here today by Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
I cannot believe that they just announced the Nintendo Switch. It's awesome.
We're never starting with Guillaume to start with, this point forward. Also joined today, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Hoi hoi, everyone. I say the same thing pretty much every time.
Yeah, I like that. I don't have to worry about somebody coming in and just trampling all over the intro I had planned. And lastly, joined by, maybe he's on the right podcast, Mr. John Lindemann.
Switches get stitches.
You just stole that from Guillaume.
Someone else. Twitter. Every joke has been made before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Simpsons did it. So, first off, I want to start with the most important thing, which is the telethon that we had last weekend. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming out. That was a tremendous number of hours of my life I'll never get back. But we raised a lot of money for charity, so it was a good cause, and John spread his wild oats all over the thing. So...
Sprayed them, even.
Can we start over? Hey, everybody! So Nintendo announced the NX today, and it's called the Nintendo Switch. Like, I want to switch this podcast off after this introduction.
I still prefer the Nintendo Switch. They were showing, like, a basketball court and people playing basketball. I don't know.
With the Switch, as they were shooting it through the hoop, and it was registering points... it's the vitality sensor on steroids. We're off to a rollicking start.
I don't know. I'm tired. Let's go do this.
We already are doing this, Guillaume. Anyway.
Oh.
So, the Nintendo Switch. It is the... Nintendo is calling this a home console... What's the phrase they've been using?
A home console. First and foremost.
First and foremost, yes.
Yeah.
Which is to say that all of the rumors of a hybrid have basically been confirmed. It is a... tablet-shaped device, I'm reticent to call it a tablet, that you attach to a dock that allows it to play on the screen, or you can take it with you with two controllers, one on each side, that can be removed and snapped together into a regular controller. You can take it with you on the go and play games remotely. It has solid-state games, so cards instead of discs. It is made on the NVIDIA Tegra processor. I mean, it's basically everything we had heard this thing was for the last few months laid bare. Even things down to there's no D-pad on either of the little attacher controllers.
Yeah, instead, that was mentioned. There'd be separate buttons, and there they are.
Yep. Like, pretty much everything, every last thing, every last detail we've pretty much seen. And so there are things that they didn't show today. So Nintendo announced it via a 3-minute YouTube video of, to quote Twitter, since we're just stealing jokes from Twitter all over the place today, a bunch of, actually this might be from our email, a bunch of 20s and 30-somethings in San Francisco in apartments they can't possibly afford.
This is correct.
Playing the Switch in various settings, like Zelda. On the couch, and then while ignoring their dog outside.
Yes, all right, I'll take you for a walk, but there will be very little walking. It'll mostly be me playing
Breath
of the Wild.
We'll be sitting on a bench.
To be fair, the dude was playing Zelda Breath of the Wild. I mean,
we'd all
do the same.
You're trying to put an end to this Zelda name stuff, and then you're going to tie it to a dog wanting to take to do his business. I mean, it's pretty much begging for the Call of the Wild title, isn't it? It's really not helping themselves out here.
I mean, that has been one of the ones that we have used a couple times.
Yeah,
it is,
and it's
good.
It's moving up the charts now, that's for sure.
Maybe this is Nintendo's official sanctioning of The Legend of Zelda, The Call of the Wild. But, so, amongst other things they showed was somebody, you know, playing a Mario game, which, hey, 3D Mario. I may be giving away the whole ghost here, because it's hard to say what they talked about in 3 minutes. It was brisk. They showed someone playing Skyrim, which is not officially confirmed for Switch because Bethesda is fucking lunatics.
Yeah.
So Bethesda, an Elder Scrolls game on a Nintendo console. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's just as crazy as
Mass Effect on Wii U, and look how that turned out.
Yeah.
Is it though? Mass Effect was on every... I mean, like...
Yeah, but...
I don't know. Please go on. It's interesting. It's interesting because...
It's interesting, but also, like, the Mass Effect for Wii U thing was, like, specifically made for the Wii U, whereas Skyrim is kind of, you know, being remastered for all consoles,
right,
and apparently also maybe for the Switch. So that's kind of, I don't know, I find that encouraging, even though Bethesda was like, well, we're helping them market the Switch, but we aren't announcing this game yet, you know?
We have not officially announced. It's like, well...
Yeah, well, at least, like, there's not as much... There's not, like, the hemming and hawing of Epic Games or, you know, like, various kind of key players here,
right,
that kind of followed, like, the announcement of the Wii U. Like, you,
yeah,
we haven't seen yet quotes from, you know... like the people at the head of various companies being like, well, you know, like Nintendo does their own thing and we don't really care for it. And yeah, they definitely came out and said stuff like that.
You got the Unreal Engine 4, you know, support confirmed and Unity and CryEngine and stuff like that. So that's helpful. Yeah, like you said, they wouldn't be. So
and also Unreal Engine 4 as well.
Yeah, yep. that was the first thing I said.
Yeah, it was. It's fine. I mean, at least he's in the right podcast today, so...
Are we sure it was not Unreal Engine 3.5 or 3.9 or something?
I thought you were going to ask, are we sure this isn't radio trivia? So yeah, just seeing the, you know, the list. And, of course, Nintendo always trots out the list because they know it's their deficiency.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, you've seen names before. We all remember the 3DS, you know, one at that E3.
Saints Row 3DS.
Exactly. You added, you know, games, you know, even not just the names of the developers, but, like, specific titles to go with them that, you know, in many cases didn't materialize. Yeah, to John's point about Mass Effect, they're like, all the sort of thing that could go up in smoke rather quickly if it isn't much right. of a success. But is it still somewhat comforting to see those names and, you know, some of them have that it has these sort of engines, these development standards, you know, supported and working on there at this stage? Yeah, it is somewhat comforting.
And hearing, so NVIDIA put out a press release because they need a win. They need a win on the investment side or for their investors. So they put out a press release talking about their involvement in developing the hardware for the Switch, for Nintendo Switch, I think is what the naming standard will probably say. I don't think we have
probably, yeah, but I mean, how many of us actually, you know, say Nintendo 3DS over and over again?
I
always say that in all caps as well.
I did a stretch where I very deliberately tried to follow their standards for Wii, which was, it is Wii, it is not the Wii, it is not Nintendo
Wii.
Yeah,
it's merely
Wii.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, GameCube was the worst for that, because GameCube was literally, they said, it has to be in capitals. That's how right. Nintendo, it was absurd.
Yes. Yeah, so it's, I sidetracked myself and forgot where I was going with this. So I'm pleased to know that if these things hadn't been there at the start, you know, hadn't been there when they did this announcement, people would have freaked the fuck out. They would have said, oh God, it's the Wii U all over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more positive than Wii U was right at the start. Absolutely.
Right. And seeing that they're there right now at all is at least a momentary reprieve of, oh, they may not have screwed this up. And I remember what I was going to say, when NVIDIA talked in their press release about their involvement in making sure this was a platform that it can be supported by developers. You know, they talked about the resources they've put onto this, and they talked about the code that's been written and all of the hardware development that's been done. So having someone from the outside, you know, intimately involved in this process who, you know, is in the gaming space pretty definitively versus, you know, IBM. I mean, NVIDIA was involved in, ATI was involved in the GameCube and the Wii, but, you know, IBM was the lead processor developer. So having somebody from the gaming space that involved is probably a good sign. And they did produce the Shield for what that's worth. Funnily enough, this and the Shield bear some similarities if you're familiar with the products. But the Shield had one big disadvantage that that Switch does have, which is games that you might want in and of themselves. Because we actually saw some games that are going to be kind of big deals.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Switch doesn't have the same problem. It has the solution.
Right.
You're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So in a way, it almost... NVIDIA is going to be involved in what they were trying to make 4 or 5 years ago. I remember when we first saw the first model Shield at PAX East. John, you and I were there looking at it. And that was the one that had like the flip top screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what they've done with the when compared to the Shield, I think they've solved not only the game's problem but also some of the hardware problems, which were, I guess, it generated an incredible amount of heat.
Yes,
and it didn't last very long.
It sure did,
battery wise.
And we don't know what the battery looks like for this thing yet.
Yeah, we don't know that. We don't know what the length of time it's going to take to actually drain it. We don't know any of that stuff yet. So,
but it's good that they've got somebody who's walked to this path before involved.
Yeah, and it's custom too. It's not just, you know,
right.
Off
it's not just
Tegra.
A Shield rebranded.
So
right, all of this stuff is custom. But what it, I mean, it looks like an inviting piece of hardware, which is the thing on the Shield that I never quite got. Mm-hmm. I guess we can start talking about reaction because we've covered a lot of the facts. I mean, obviously there's some games we need to talk about, but when I saw the thing, so I wasn't able to watch it live. I watched it about 20 minutes later with no spoilers whatsoever, except Nintendo putting the name of the device on the YouTube description. I want to hold that thing. like that's where I'm at with the Wii.
Like to hug it?
It's
or?
Like a beautiful
no,
woman.
Like to actually feel it, and experience it. With the Wii U, it was a weird curiosity. Like, I need to know what this thing is like. This thing is crazy.
Well, that's the thing. But, I mean, did you get to hold like the proto gamepad?
I did.
With the circle pads on, like longer before the Wii U launch than we are away from the NX launch now,
or
from the Switch launch.
A full year and a half before the Wii U came out. I held that crazy thing that they announced. Did they announce it at that E3, or had they announced it? I know it had leaked before. I think they announced they were going to announce it. I went to that E3 just because I was curious about what this thing was. I had actually planned to skip that one. But this, I want to hold it and play games on. It's not a curiosity at this point. It's a piece of hardware I want to have around me. Because it looks cool. It looks like something that would be fun to play games on. It looks like... I spoke about this with the Wii U gamepad. In my apartment, which was sort of this cacophony of Wi-Fi signals, because it was an apartment full of people in their mid to late 20s to early 30s.
In apartments they could afford, because it's reality.
Right. in decently high-end apartments, so like people who had tech money and they were willing to buy extraneous devices, the gamepad had a conniption anytime I tried to use it, because there's just so much noise in the space that it couldn't. And in fact, I had an interference monitor that I borrowed.
Oh, you have
from
a lot of 5 gigahertz signals.
It's just a loud word.
That five gigahertz signals are what kills the gamepad. For the record, that is what we'll always do it in, because I've noticed that depending on what I set my Xbox One to, because I can either set it to pick up the 2.4 gig network or the 5, and the difference is blisteringly obvious.
And it's entirely possible there were other gamepads in the space. Like
I hadn't even thought about that.
So you should be like the only one on my block with anything Nintendo.
Yeah, like I was in the core demographic for who might potentially own one of these damn things.
Yeah.
So
happy when I get a street pass at this point.
Yeah. But even in my house with, you know, old plaster walls that are basically made of stone, the gamepad doesn't go very far. So having this thing and actually being able to take it upstairs, like, and just like chill out in bed and play games is kind of like, for other people who had Wii U's, like, whatever. I've been doing that.
Or to a rooftop cookout.
That's true. Or to a rooftop cookout with my attractive, racially diverse friends in our expensive apartments. Oh, that is the best marketing video Nintendo has put out since like the Wii days, where it was just like, look at my assortment of diverse friends in various age groups, all showing how much fun they are having playing Wii.
Wonderfully aspirational. That's how I would describe it.
This is my America. That should have been the Switch's Nintendo Switch, : this is my America. But they showed the same trailer in all countries, so I guess that wouldn't fly.
Yeah. That's interesting, actually, because, you know, something that they obviously, it's core to the system, the notion of being able to take these console experiences around with you. So it's not surprising you saw it in a bunch of different settings. But I thought it was interesting that so much of it seemed to be the notion of taking it with you and then having local multiplayer. Right. Of various sorts, like in the car, on the rooftop, on a basketball court.
Or in the airport.
And it's funny because, as you said, obviously, you know, it kind of seemed like it was primarily like an American kind of targeted video, even though it was for everyone. But it seems to me like that is more of a Japan-leaning selling point.
Super Japan-leaning.
Because, you know, the Monster Hunter culture, you know, the local multiplayer with portable.
That is the home of the next Monster Hunter.
Yeah, so absolutely. So I mean, yeah, so while, yeah, you know, this video had the trappings of American stuff and, or, you know, just kind of diversity or...
Except for one spot. There's one spot where it was clearly not shot in America. Do you remember what it is?
The esports thing?
Yeah, the Splatoon esports.
Yeah, exactly.
That is so distinctly for the Japanese audience.
The fact that they showed Splatoon, and we talked about it before in terms of, you know, what they would like to do, you know, what ambitions they would have for Splatoon in the future. You've got that to the point, you know, making that a Monster Hunter type of multiplayer hit in Japan.
And an esport.
It did relatively well in Japan on Wii U, which was obviously not very popular there or anywhere else. So, yeah, I mean, that was a natural choice, and we saw it. And I think that could be a really big selling point in Japan in terms of getting them to buy, you know, more of a traditional kind of console device, but tapping into these markets, you know, where, like, you know, PSP has had success because of that kind of stuff, where it didn't really succeed anywhere else in the world to any great degree. And then obviously kind of, you know, 3DS has picked up on that. So yeah, I kind of feel like they've got a good selling point there. I'm not as convinced about how appealing that is for other markets yet. That remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's the thing, because ordinary people pick this up, you know? Like, are people playing games on their tablet because they like to play games portably, like sitting anywhere in the house, or are they playing tablet games because they have a tablet?
And it doesn't cut, checking their email. There's no extra cost, you know, associated with having a dedicated device. I mean, it's an interesting part in terms of the functionality of the device. I mean, kind of skip ahead a little bit here, but, you know, the questions about will it have touch, for instance, which it seems perhaps quite likely that it won't. They haven't actually said that yet, but
I'm not so sure, because all the rumors that were right, that was one of the things they mentioned, was it had multi-screen touch. And
okay, but why would they make the dock specifically to hide the tablet in if there's a touchscreen you can use?
Well, maybe
that's a part of the design I don't understand. Like, because then you would lock some games away from the TV. Whereas, like, in the press release, they say, like, all the games on your TV and can't be taken on the go. Or does that imply that you can play more games on the go than on TV? Like, all the games that are playable on TV, you can take on the go.
But not necessarily
the ones that
are
on the go, not necessarily on TV.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a lot of questions that have yet to be answered. This video is essentially like, you know, in an old school unveiling at an E3, you know, like we were talking about before, like, this would be the video that kicks things off. And then you'd have a bunch of other stuff, like, here's an extended look at a particular game, or here's someone to talk about what we could do with this new set. And, you know, here we are now in this new age of disseminated information, where it's like, you just get the 3-minute video and that's it for a while, for an unspecified amount. Although it did, of course, reaffirm the March timeline. So, you know, which we wondered about, considering this seemed a bit later than we perhaps thought. But to get back to, you know, what I was saying before, I think whether it has touch or things like this is interesting, because I think it kind of affects how you look at this device. Is it kind of a console that you happen to be able to take on the go, and that's a fun thing? In which case, like, well, you wouldn't expect to be using, unless you're a Wii U owner, which of course there are far too few of us out there, wouldn't necessarily be expecting touch functionality with console gaming. That's not really something that's synonymous for most people. But, you know, so it wouldn't be a big deal that it wouldn't have it. But on the other hand, if you're looking at it primarily as a tablet-like device, a portable device, and it doesn't have touch, that's just kind of weird and backward. So it, yeah, the fact that they've talked about it being primarily, you know, a home console kind of thing kind of makes me wonder whether it might be possible that it might not have certain aspects, you know, all the bells and whistles of what the Wii U gamepad had.
Well, and it's actually kind of difficult right now to get a screen that doesn't have touch on it, because even laptop screens now have touch.
Yeah, there was a famous thing with the 2DS, and it's just one big touchscreen.
It was cheaper to buy a touchscreen in that shape than have one made that is the two screens.
Yeah, sure.
But what I would imagine is there are use cases that may exist when you are holding the device that don't exist when it's in a dock. And I don't think there's anything particularly weird about that. I think, you know, if you've got it with you and you have Wi-Fi, maybe you do want the ability to do some basic tablet functionality. Maybe you do want the ability to sketch something, because they've actually had a lot of luck with some of things like the Art Academy games. The Art Academy has actually been a fairly successful product for them. So maybe...
Maybe there are scenarios
where it's just, yes, this still works in your home because you are in your home playing it, but it's...
Yeah, maybe they just didn't want to show too much initially. Right. Like, because just last week I said that asymmetrical multiplayer seemed to confuse people. Like, the Wii U tablet or gamepad can do so many things, but not every game can do the same things. And I kind of I concluded that the off-TV play was the most... kind of convincing use, and the one that kind of, I don't know, is the most convincing.
It ended up having the greatest saliency of all the sort of features of the Wii U, and now we have a platform.
That's all that they're selling.
Yeah,
they're
seemingly
on,
built around that, and of course expanding it from the point of view you can actually, you know, take it away from your house, and it's not limited by how many 5 gigahertz signals you've got going around your house or whatever.
Right. But I suppose if you were to show someone like just doodling on their Switch, that could send a mixed message that, okay, this is a portable, this is a tablet, and also you can kind of connect
it's not trying to do the whole like, oh, it does all this stuff that it's very much seemed to be. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a console, you play sort of high quality console games, and then you take them with you. That's, you know, so I think that's why the choice of Skyrim, you know, whether or not that's like literally going to be a product, I assume it will be, considering they're just doing a remaster, but you know, that that, you know, it sort of speaks, I think, to a lot of people. It's a very highly recognizable sort of mainstream game, and I think, you know, this is the kind of game that you play already on perhaps other consoles, and now imagine if you could just kind of take it with you in this way. They demonstrated it, you know, airports and you know, whatever else. I think that that's what they're
sitting on the floor for no reason.
That's what they're concentrating on. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's limited to that. I think I think Gil makes a good point in terms of they may be just trying to focus the messaging in this you know, period. There may be there's other components to it. Like I said, this is just the beginning. You know, you don't want to get too carried away with what this is. Like I said, normally we'd just be on to the next part of the sprawling press conference with like a few awkward gags.
We would see some of those games.
and then some more games.
But they were very clear to not mix in Netflix, nothing like that. There was nothing.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah, we'll get to see this thing's TV eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We're all waiting.
We can only
it's going to drop at some point.
It's going to be called the Channel Switch, and you're good. It's TV, just rebranded.
Oh, man.
It's a bad enough pun that Nintendo might do it, and it's just there for the taking. What Greg really hit on, though, the idea of this was the intro to the Wii U press conference right before we met nondescript action hero, i.e. the point where everyone watching died a little bit. They showed these games, which are always in the sizzle reel, like a really quick look at a game, just showing somebody playing it. So they go, yes, this is a real thing that you play real games on. And then later they come back around and go, you may have noticed an old friend in our video earlier. His name is Mario. We're like, yes, Reggie, we know it's fucking Mario. Tell us what the game is. Now we're going to bring out, and then it would be whoever he's going to bring out to show off the game.
Yeah.
And then that would be it. But obviously we don't have that. But we got 3 seconds of a Mario that looks like it's got like Day of the Dead style art to it.
Well, yeah, although there was the main bit you see look like that, but then another bit where the bullet bills and stuff just look like it could have been out of 3D world. I mean, it was kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is what happens when you're just looking at a few seconds of footage out of any kind of context, I guess. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's worth mentioning that there were sort of reports... There is reporting around saying that, you know, that in fact Nintendo may initially have planned to release this sort of video last month when a lot of people thought it would come, but didn't because the games, you know, were not far along enough. Which seems a little odd given what is in this video. I wouldn't dismiss that out of hand. What I'm saying is you've got to think, if there's any substance in those reports, that the next phase of actually demonstrating, you know, specific games in a more extended format is not far away.
Maybe it was more an issue of they hadn't done, you know, Nintendo, all publishers, but Nintendo especially, are super... anal retentive about certifying their press event demos. You know, I've very rarely had a Nintendo press event demo crash on me.
Well, I mean Skyrim. I mean certainly that game is absolutely rock solid.
Yeah, that game. No bugs that whatsoever. Game doesn't even need to be bug checked, obviously, nope. Because Bethesda sure doesn't bother.
Yep.
But it could just be that those games weren't in a position, or maybe they were finalizing some elements of. Of like the programming.
It just says to me that they've
got
a release plan that they have, you know, for building momentum, and it's like we want the video to hit at this time, and then with so many days or weeks later, we want to be able to give people a more extended look at the specific pieces of software. And so, like I said, I mean, there's nothing in this video that couldn't have been shown a month ago. I think if indeed that reporting is on target, I think it says they've got a very specific pace that they've sketched out to try to build this thing, because this is very different. I said you're different from the old model, way closer to the launch date that we're used to. So, you know, this is different for them, but I assume they've got a very kind of rigorously laid out plan that they're trying to stick to.
Obviously. But it is closer to a technology product than a video game console launch.
I think it's in lockstep with the U.S. election.
Oh, God damn it, John. So last night, as the internet was losing its mind over both of the debate and the NX pending reveal, I took up drinking. Because that was the only thing my brain could handle at that moment. So thank you, John, for bringing me back to that dark place.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's
get ready for November 28th. That's all I can tell you.
God damn it. November 28th? What is November 28th, John?
That's the point. It's Trump, but it's 20 days later once. He didn't even know what the date of the election was.
No. Yeah. I turned on the blinders as of last night after the beer started pouring, so I don't need this.
It's so good.
I'm the only person who has to vote in this stupid election. Can you stop, please?
All right.
Anyway. So let's talk about what we did see. We saw Splatoon. Obviously, the Splatoon detectives pointed out that there are, like, new hairstyles and stuff. And, in fact, the Japanese Splatoon Twitters made a joke about new species of squid.
Octolings, man? Is that ever going to happen?
No, like, different hairstyles,
I know. I'm just saying, like, you know,
I was right if the Octoling thing happened.
It was in the Splatoon, like, code, wasn't it? Like, hackers found it and stuff. So they obviously had plans for it, but, you know, we've covered this. They've abandoned ship on the Wii U. So you got to think,
bail out.
Not only, you know, whether it's a port or a sequel or whatever, you got to think all the kind of plans they had for the Wii U game, which they did support quite robustly for quite a while. But it seems like they had more plans, and you got to think they'll get folded into whatever this is now.
We also saw a Mario Kart game that looks suspiciously like Mario Kart 8, but you could hold two items and Boo's were
that was conspicuous, the two items and King Boo, like as if to say it's not, you know, we're not, this is not just Mario Kart 8 footage, but it's still not clear what it actually is.
Plus the fact that they clearly showed the inklings that were different.
Still not sure exactly how original it's going to be, but I get. I mean, look, you know, I mean, the Mario Kart games have generally been on a kind of 3-ish year cycle, which, you know, we'll be right in that window next year.
Right.
So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a completely original Mario Kart by the time we get there. But I suppose it's also possible that it could be at least heavily leveraged on Mario Kart 8, given they probably feel like not enough people played that for how much effort they put into it and how good it was.
But how will I... Go ahead, Guillaume.
How, were we going to make the same joke? How will we hunk if we don't have a touch screen?
Exactly the same joke.
Apparently is,
terrible minds think alike, Guillaume.
He's the pertinent question.
So cynical.
Anyway.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, you know.
Yep.
How will
but
I
yeah,
hunk
like,
if
maybe,
I'm a...
like, we don't know. Yeah, maybe this is going to turn out to be just like Mario Kart 8.5 or something.
Yeah.
A few new tracks and, yeah, King Boo. And,
great.
Well, I don't know. Like,
we'll
because so
Mario
many people
Kart,
haven't
Mario
played
Kart,
Mario
yeah,
Kart
8
yet, why wouldn't you?
I was just thinking of it sort of Mario Kart 8.5, which weirdly makes it seem like a Wii first person shooter review by John.
Oh, by the way, if they had the audacity to point five numbers after not counting ever, I am eternally vindicated for my hate
that would
Mario
be amazing,
Kart 7's
yeah, if they went to fractions, if they went Kingdom Hearts on us after
Mario Kart 365 and a half. Yeah, the great. It's hard to fill 3 minutes and not just be goofy because really, or excuse me, 40 minutes, which was our target for the segment, and not just be goofy because it was kind of a goofy thing that we spent months and months waiting for a 3 minute trailer.
A 3 minute trailer that ultimately was very consistent with all the things that we'd been put out there.
Right.
In the past few months.
Everything that earned the siren, which I'll probably put in right about here.
You do not currently know what the NX is. You do not currently know what the NX is.
As a retirement statement, everything that we would hear it and we'd go, but. No.
Yeah, it was the caveat. That's what it was. It was the caveat of saying, we don't know this for sure, but, you know, there's reason to believe, you know, maybe some of this could be on target. And then, of course, you get here and much of it was on target. And that's the thing.
Right.
That did rob it of a bit of its impact, you know, in terms of, you know, the whole sort of, you know, the whole sort of thing was very built around the logo snapping into place, like, you know, that was you know, I think that probably would have had, it was kind of a neat little sort of thing to stitch it all together, but it probably would have had more impact if you weren't expecting that to be the whole thing of the device, the platform. Whereas, of course, you know, if you've been following this stuff like we have, and many others have, and people who listen to the show have, then, you know, it's like, yeah, that's what we've heard, you know. So to
give you the arrow hidden in the FedEx logo moment of the Switch logo, it's a yin yang symbol symbolizing that it's got two roles and two faces. It's like the marketing people are the worst. They are the absolute worst of humanity.
Does it also suggest that there'll be a poorly localized Goemon game on it?
Yes.
I mean, I'd settle for that at this point.
It's marketing people and then tyrants. And then you get to the rest of your bad people. So
the logo also symbolizes that if you pick up a key, it's going to chase you around in space and... I don't know. It's going to try to hurt you.
I'm going
to
write the Tao of Mario now. Anyway, we've gone off the rails a little bit. Because like I said, it is difficult to kind of fill this. Because we don't know a whole tremendous amount about this thing. Even though we know
and
everything
yet,
about it.
Are any of us like really down on this?
No.
Like I haven't seen like the reaction.
We it's, you know, fitting really that we just did the Wii eulogy, you know, on the weekend before this. Maybe that's what was holding up. They were waiting for us to bury the Wii U, and then a few days later, I'm not saying that's what happened, but it's definitely happened. But the point was, you know, what did I say? You know, off TV play was the biggest thing about the Wii U for me. I loved it. It enabled me to play, you know, kind of games in a way that I hadn't before. You know, maybe try to, you know, sort of like a Xenoblade. Even though I played one on Wii, you know, because how different it was, you know, the more openness and all that, I'm not sure whether I would have gone for it if I didn't have off TV play. Well, now basically you've got a system,
no TV,
you've got
play.
A system built around that, and if it could deliver on, you know, the third party support, yeah, stuff like Skyrim. You know, I mean, I haven't played an Elder Scrolls game, even though I've had plenty of platforms that could do it, because I just don't see me. I don't see me getting through it without, you know, something like an off TV play to help. And this gives me a chance to tap into that that I haven't had.
This has led to a bet between me and John.
I'm so excited about this bet. I'm so excited.
Yep.
Can I finish Skyrim if I get it on a portable system?
Yeah.
John thinks that I don't know why. Like, why would you think I can't finish Skyrim? Is it
he
that
it's
us, or is the problem me?
I just think I know. I don't think you would give up. I just think you would get distracted by other games and just eventually leave it.
Mm. But John, if he does, what do we get?
You get to I vow to go through Super Mario Brothers 3. On the 3DS with the god awful D-pad, which is so terrible.
Greg, by the way, we're the only ones who can win this bet.
Oh, John,
if Guillaume doesn't
John doesn't
have to play. But if he does,
that D-pad
he does.
Is so terrible.
We are like that. Oh, we are the house. We win whatever. But like, I'd like to up the ante actually for you, John. I want you to beat Super Mario Bros. 3 when it inevitably comes out on the Switch with the C button type buttons that they've got instead of a D-pad.
Okay.
Because they've actually got the little arrows on just like the N64 C buttons. So, if you could beat Super Mario Bros. 3 with that. With that tiny little controller with a faux D-pad,
well, if I can beat it with the D-pad on the 3D on the original 3DS, I can beat it with anything, I think.
It's a bad example, John. Or actually, let's talk about those controllers real quick, because that's the one thing I've seen blowback on. Can somebody remind me what they're called? Because their name
is Joy-Con.
Joy and Conrad, I think, is their names.
Joy and Conrad.
The Joy-Cons.
Is this like a 70s folks band? The Joy and Conrad?
Well, you know, like Nintendo has anthropomorphized the balance board. I think we're very close to seeing these two little widgets show up, like talking to you in a tutorial.
I talk back to my balance board, thank you.
Monito with Nintendo Land, which was kind of like the gamepad talking to you or something. So,
but the Joy-Con is very small, or the Joy-Con are very small.
The Joy-Con, or is it like
plural.
The Borg?
The Joy-Con. My question was: do they have force feedback at all?
We don't know, and we don't know if they have gyroscopes.
Right, we don't know if they have motion. We don't know. We know so little about them. It's kind of crazy. They didn't show anybody using motion at any point. Much like they didn't show anybody
using touchscreens.
Again, I feel
like the whole core message there was, this is console gaming as you know it, but you can take it anywhere like that. So I think, I think Guillaume's right. It would have been muddled if you tried to bring in additional kind of what some people might call gimmicks. Because then it's like, is that the point of the system? Or, you know,
and I think that's really the reason why the reaction is so positive, because you watch that video and you're like, okay, I get it. It's like, you can take your games on the go. Whereas, you know, when the Wii U was revealed and then they bring you to, you know, try to draw a 20-degree angle and, okay, here in this demo, you have to, look around this garden and find the bird.
Who can draw
the
22-centimeter line?
Right. So it was all like these little concepts, you know, like all these little kind of experiences, but it didn't seem to form kind of a unified whole. You know, it was just like, okay, I just, you know, like,
yeah, it was, yeah, it was
shield
very
myself against
it.
That
it
pirate
was very
ship.
Scattershot, yeah, was, and then you had games which Nintendo Land and Game and Wario, you know, having some of these concepts, like that's what they were. They were just these weird, like, just brainstorming sessions.
And you were playing that,
software.
And yeah. And you were coming out of those demos thinking, like, okay, I guess that was a thing, you know, but it was not overly.
It's kind of thing that, you know, I could enjoy those things, play them, but I guess the problem is when you put them out front in the messaging of the system, does it muddle, you know, what it is? And of course, the name didn't do it for any favors as far as muddled messages go and all that. So, you know, with the name and the, you know, sort of clarity of focus and everything, I think it had a clear message. And so
to their new play Nintendo branding too.
Yeah,
so
that's
they're very obviously transitioning away from the Wii era branding now.
There's no play like it or whatever. That slogan that they've been running around for a few months now.
Yeah, they have the play Nintendo channel with the terrifying puppet and weird stuff happening that's really upsetting. But like they are slowly migrating to this new schema that they're wrapping themselves in. So we'll be fully immersed in the play puns very soon, ladies and gentlemen. So be ready for that. What I have for you as a question to each of you, and we'll go around the room real quick. What game right now, not necessarily a game that's announced, but a game, it could be a Nintendo game we know is coming. What game did you immediately think of playing when you actually saw the device and said, oh, it's real? Because I know my answer.
I'm not sure I understand the question, like, but I'll answer anyway.
Good.
I just thought, my mind was like, okay, I hope that Persona 5 comes out on the Switch.
I could see that.
Just because, and RPGs in general, Final Fantasy 15, like, sure. That immediately, instantly increases the chances that I'm actually going to finish it.
That would be like the PS4 version of DQ11, I think is another thing worth thinking about. If it's got the same sort of sensibility as DQ7, everybody is, it seems like, I would never get around to play that in front of the TV by itself.
So for me, it was, it was a game like Xenoblade, where we talked about, having it on the TV.
Yeah,
it's great because I like to watch that game on the TV, and I think I would mostly play that game still on the TV. But the ability to just go off and do crap, and as I thought about it, I was like, "Well, I still like Xenoblade on the big screen." And then I realized it's Tokyo Mirage Sessions. There will be a Tokyo Mirage Sessions port to this thing, almost invariably, because
just as a case of amortizing the costs of making the game. Right. It's because it couldn't have sold much. Yeah. It couldn't have recouped
much. No, it sold very poorly. Yeah. But it would be a really good experience to play that game on that device. It would just work really well. And
the Wii U version doesn't have off TV play, so I know
it doesn't. So you'd have to make that work, but all you'd really have to do is put the phone inside of a menu as opposed to saying you always have access to it.
It could easily be done.
The phone doesn't do anything, really. It's just there. So, I don't know. Did anybody else have any,
Xenoblade for me, for sure.
Monolith are going to be doing the next thing beyond provided tech support for Zelda, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the one for me. I mean, really off TV play. I had no desire to really do off TV play with the original because, or with X, just because, I really love the map. And I would love to see how they navigate around that. So, and I love the way you use the map, what you had to do with it, all that kind of stuff. So I would like to see them, design something from scratch for it and be able to actually, really have some real off TV play where, you actually can leave your place and play out there. It'd be really cool.
So before we move to questions, because we've got a lot of them, is it too big? And I asked this because, we'd heard that one of the rumors that came out roughly around the same time as the second wave of NX rumors was that Nintendo really does plan to support the 3DS for a while, which I get because the 3DS is still reasonably successful for them. But this doesn't seem like a great replacement for the 3DS because it's very big.
Yes, but I think there is, and I mean, I'm sure we'll kind of touch on some of these topics with the list of questions we got. But I think, first of all, there's a lot of these things will be contingent on how the system performs and the different markets, how it performs and whatnot. But there is the potential for variants of this down the line. Again, I don't think they would want to confuse the messaging now, but the whole family of systems kind of concept, we've seen already with 3DS, a 2DS, the bigger models, the smaller models. I could imagine a model that is more explicitly focused on being a portable first. If this is a console first, maybe we could get a platform, a device in the same platform that might have a more, smaller form factor that's more like durable and stuff, maybe better for kids or, you could, I think if this is successful enough to have, other sort of SKUs and stuff down the line, I could imagine them sort of addressing that in that way.
especially as higher DPI screens get cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You won't have to just scale down the resolution.
That's always been an influence on the changes, that the revisions they've had of previous Nintendo portables, is screen technology change, you know, cost change, technology changes, and they kind of move accordingly. And you've got to think that's going to be a factor, and then they can kind of tailor it to specific, you know, once they get their sort of analytics about how people use this thing, and they might say, well, maybe, you know, if we sort of push a version in this direction, we'll hit this market and all that kind of thing. It's all going to depend on the performance in the marketplace, but then I think there's a lot of contingencies they can explore with sort of specialized versions.
Right. But I will be interested in, do I see people out and about with this thing? Because you would have to make a concerted effort to take it somewhere. Versus my 3DS, which I can just grab.
Yeah, that goes back to what I was saying. Like, I could see that a lot more in Japan than elsewhere.
The
skepticism you're talking about, I could kind of relate to that for, you know, Europe and America.
I'm interested in, like, would I play this on a plane? Because I'm about to go fly for 12 hours, so I'm going to play a lot of 3DS on that plane. To the point where I have one of those like USB backup batteries, and I'm just gonna, even though there is allegedly jacks on the plane, I'm not taking any risks.
You gotta have something to keep me going.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be playing a lot of game on that, but would I want to have that big screen showing me playing Skyrim? I mean, on a plane, maybe not. That might be kind of so it might it. If there's no privacy playing on this thing. I don't know. It's
what are you
it's
saying?
Weird.
You're saying that we won't get Senran Kagura 3 on it?
Oh, we probably will, actually, because the Vita's going to go away, and at some
it's
point they're going to
it's
put gotta, that shit
it's
on gotta something.
It's got to inherit the movie market. You know, what else?
It's more like when Bayonetta 2 inevitably comes to this thing, because it will. We don't have any evidence of that except common sense. Would I play that on a plane? Probably not, because that's a fairly inexplicable set of imagery. I don't know. It's
I'm sure that, you know, like privacy screens for tablets will fit on this thing. You'll be fine.
It's true. It's so I can watch all of my booby games right there. I can play Sega Hard Girls on this thing on the plane when it inevitably comes. And I'm sorry if you know what Sega Hard Girls is.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry that you know what Sega Hard Girls is.
You can thank Seren, I mean, who's not sorry I know what Sega Hard Girls is.
Yeah, Seren pretty much is the source of all of this, by the way.
She is the patient zero for all this crap. I don't know. It's a minor concern.
I get it. But I mean, I think if it's as long as it doesn't completely die, you know, straight away, then they could probably address form factor concerns down the line.
It really depends on its weight too. I mean, getting that thing in hand is going to tell you a lot, because if it's big and clunky, I mean, then you probably won't be putting it in your bag. But if it's light, then sure. I mean, to me, it would just be like carrying around a Kindle or something like
it
that.
It looks very inviting to hold.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to say, but it really does. Like there is a sense that this could be a neat thing to have and to interact with. And I never felt that way about the Wii U. And granted, I played the Wii, like as Greg alluded to, I played the Wii U like one of the first people to touch the stupid thing when it was that weird prototype and they were showing off the Ghost Recon game that never happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna be a really hard to judge until you actually touch it and
I mean, apart from what's actually going to be on the screen, I do feel like in terms of the aesthetics of the hardware, it does seem like they're trying to make it look more like something you wouldn't be embarrassed to pull out in public relative to some of their other, you know, their previous things. Obviously, the Wii U, the gamepad was never intended to be pulled out, you know, on the go. Obviously,
despite some internet images where people had like batteries in their bag or whatever,
it definitely seems a lot more conscious of those sort of people's sort of aesthetics shame about their gadgets.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm excited. What about you guys? I know we've kind of gone rambly a little bit
I'm definitely excited. But in terms of specific games, I mean, you know, it's I'll be honest, this is a really boring answer, but I'm just really excited about EAD Tokyo's next Mario game.
Yeah, it's I know, just, it looks cool, we know nothing
they
about
are,
it.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again, EAD Tokyo, for me, a bat in 1,000, all the way from Jungle Beat to Captain Toad and all the great Mario-ness in between. They've done no wrong, so I can't help but be most pumped for that. But yeah, that's not really like the off-TV or take-it-away-with-you thing at all, but it just the sheer quality of game there is what I'm looking forward to.
But what if you could? Like, what if you could actually go out and play a 3D platformer just wherever? Like, that's kind of cool. We've never, like, 3D Land is the closest we've had to that.
Yeah there'll still be a certain novelty with that, but it's just all about, you know, what they could do with design and stuff that I'm looking forward to that. I will say it's an interesting thing with Breath of the Wild now, in terms of, you know, Wii U off TV play, I'm pretty well set up for it. I don't have too many issues with interference and distance and stuff. However, if, as the demo suggested at E3, they're not actually going to do something with the touch on this, you know, it seems like they may have like wrenched those out possibly.
Even though he's holding a game.
Yeah, I know. Like it's a little uncomfortable, but yeah, you know, it seems like changes have been made maybe in that area, but. Then you'll come back to maybe is more appealing on the Switch because, you know, it's going to be a better quality screen. You haven't got the streaming angle, you know, especially with detail graphics, which obviously is quite stylized, but there is going to be, you know, there is, you know, a certain amount of detail there. You could get some artifacting and stuff like that. This is going to be a lot more crisp. Especially for such a gorgeous, the color reproduction, I think, is really crucial. Doesn't do so well with reds, especially on the Wii U gamepad. So the fact that it's looking this robust, and like I said, an open game like that benefits a lot from off TV play. It's unless I'm going to find out that there's a lot of like touch conveniences that you've seen in like the various Zelda remakes over the past few years, right. It will be intact on Wii U, then they're probably going to influence me to get it on Switch instead, which may in fact be the point of pulling those things out in the first place, sadly.
To make the Switch better, definitively the better version?
In a very real sense, make you make the Switch.
Oh, alright. So we have to wrap
let's
up.
Let's move on.
We have to wrap up. So, what is your price point? Knowing what we know now, understanding that this is probably where the siren actually most matters.
Can I just list my three last questions that I have?
Do it. Do it.
My last three questions are: it looks like the Joy-Cons can be held sideways for some games, like they would be held that way for NES games. So, Virtual Console, what's going on with Virtual Console with this? That's number one.
Virtual Console will be there, obviously.
But in what form and how? Right. They don't really go into it. Is it going to be slicker, or how's it going to be handled?
It's going to be switchier.
Hopefully. And all of this,
that right
all
now,
this hard,
like this.
Yeah, for me, all of this hardware is cool. But what's going on with the Nintendo account stuff and the online experience? Is it better? Is it still clunky? Is it still goofy? Does it still change from game to game? That's what I want to know.
So I saw secondhand sourcing, so I haven't been able to track down the original. So DNA shows up as the list of developers and middleware providers on that image that Nintendo put out. And their explanation is not that they're making games for Switch. It's that they are doing the network stuff.
This is true. So I'm hoping it's better.
Yeah, I mean, it should be better. And
It should be.
The work that they've been doing, you know, the Nintendo rewards being what they are right now aside, there is progress being made, and they've made progress every iteration on their systems since back on the friggin' DS. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping by now we'll get there.
Yep. Final question is, how does it interact with 3DS?
Ooh. Does it interact with 3DS?
Does it? Yeah.
And how? Ooh, yeah. That's a good question. Like, what if they put out a Monster Hunter version on that thing?
Yeah.
But remember is that when they put out a Monster Hunter version of that thing, is it 4 or do they finally make a 5? And if it's 4, does it have any interaction with previous 4s?
Yeah.
Probably not, because they probably want to force Japan to make the Switch, as it were. And we're just going to start calling things the Switch now, aren't we?
Yep. My price point is $249.
$249.
Really?
That,
yep. So knowing that a Wii U goes for 300. Well, no, 200.
The, yeah, the but Wii, I mean, the Wii U Fire Sale will start soon.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not about the Wii U's price point, though, right? It's like the Wii U has always been kind of artificially high because it was never selling, and the hardware never really got cheaper to make. So, I mean, if it was a normal console, they would have dropped the
price. But you're
point
saying
way
that
down.
before the Switch gets cheaper to make,
before the Switch,
it's already going to be. Yeah, like even before its popularity is proven or it has sold well, it's going to be 250. I think that's, I don't know. I don't see this thing below 350.
Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll drop the Wii U at for Christmas.
I think they will.
Probably, but they're going to be cleared, right? Because they're going to stop. Yeah, the production is going to wind down. Then it's just going to be a case of the stock clearing the stock, I would imagine, with that. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough to without knowing exactly what is in it. You know, because we don't know all the feature sets. Yeah. You know, and also we don't know how aggressive they want to be on price. In terms of typically with Nintendo, we feel like they don't want to sell stuff at much of a loss. They said with Wii U that they actually kind of went at a loss, didn't they? A minor loss, taking into consideration all the costs. But, you know, and the price point probably was, you know, did hamstring them a bit. In the past, you know, like with 3DS, you know, they went too high and all that. So, and then they had to cut it drastically and apologize and all that crazy stuff. So it's, it's difficult to know. In the past, you felt like, well, they priced it, so they made something off it, and that's that. With this, I wonder, you know, because they've got a lot of headwinds, you know, blowing in there. You know, the dedicated hardware, you know, for people, especially taking things on the go, is not, you know, in vogue. You know, it seems like, you know, a lot of people think it's going to just go away altogether. Then you've got the other consoles that are already established.
I mean, PS4 Slim with a game is $300.
Right. So that's what I was going to say, is that $300 is where their competitors will be. But they do have, I mean, they have advantages over their competitor now. They do something different.
Yeah, but it's always a question of how much that difference is worth, isn't it? You know, I mean, a lot of people kind of, you know, it was relatively, you know, fairly affordable, but a lot of people chuckled at the Wii being the price that it was, because it's like, well, you know, what's this giving you, really? You know, it's a GameCube with a peripheral or whatever, but, you know, the difference was worth it to people, and they paid way above the market price in the end because of the supply constraints. Whereas, you know, with something like 3DS, you know, stereoscopic 3D was a difference, but it didn't justify it to people in the end, the extra cost. Mm-hmm. And so that's the real question. I feel like, yeah, they're under pressure to make it affordable. Yeah, I think the 300 or under would be desirable, but I not knowing the constraints they're dealing with, I don't know whether they can make that happen.
So here's one thing, when you're discussing headwinds, there's one thing that's actually kind of a headwind, but also kind of an advantage. And right now, PS4 has not super well established itself in the home market.
Yeah, it just had a surge with the new, you know, Slim model.
Persona.
Yeah, and Persona and all that. But that surge took it past the Wii U's install base. So that gives you, only just crept ahead of the Wii U. So that gives you a seal of how slender it is.
So they need to be, they need to make a run at that market, because having at least those third parties in position is good for them worldwide, because that is a series of games. Those are games that they could have in their portfolio. And being a player in Western markets, that might be enough for them to be able to call it a success. But I'm with John that 250 is a great target price, given that their competitors are sitting around 300 right now.
Yeah, and the Nvidia Shield, just out of curiosity, I looked it up on Amazon, and you can get the tablet with a controller for 250. It's like a kind of a rando price, but it's $250 basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the Shield.
Yeah, I agree, but
I don't know. I was gonna say 400 before you guys convinced me to less than that. Well, I'm pessimistic.
Guillaume's converting to Canadian, so
no, I'm talking about US prices.
I was giving you an out.
Canadian is like 450.
I don't even want to think about a new console cycle starting under these circumstances.
Yeah, Canadians will have to get a second job for sure.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's I love the throwbacks to PS3, if we're doing that,
I'm looking forward to them explaining a potential lack of touch controllers that it's last-gen tech, like Sony did with Rumble.
Yeah. God. I'm optimistic Nintendo understands that the price was a problem for both the 3DS and the Wii U, and when they developed this system, were conscientious of that. That they said, we understand that the price constrained 3DS in the early going, as well as the availability of games. Obviously, they have been working on the games part. We are going to have, maybe not at launch, but we are going to have, I'm going to say the unthinkable, Zelda will hopefully be at launch. I don't know if they've ever actually said it would launch with NX.
I don't think there's been explicit promises, but...
But there will be a 3D Mario game on the horizon, and who knows what else they've got that they are waiting to show us. Like this, they could have solved the games problem for 3DS.
Well, like I said, the Wii U is going to essentially subsidize the Switch's software library, as you've said.
I'm expecting to be impressed by the launch lineup.
Yeah.
Just because they pretty much like just washed their hands of the Wii U and they've been working on this for years.
Especially if they've locked down some, you know, maybe year-old ports from other consoles, because Wii U owners may not have those other consoles, and maybe people who haven't made the jump yet might say, oh, I get two things in one here. I'll make the jump now. Mm-hmm. But it looks different. And I think that helps them a little bit if their pricing is slightly out of sync with their competitors, because it feels like a different kind of product.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, it depends on how much utility people, you know, can see in being able to take it with them to different places and stuff. And that goes back to
I don't even necessarily mean the functionality. I mean, it looks appreciably different. I mean, look at the PS4 and the Xbox One, especially their launch. They were black rectangular objects that had some weird geometry to them. Like they were set top boxes. They seemed very similar in a lot of ways, and it physically looks different. And that may give them some ability to say it's kind of a different market. It does some of the same things, but maybe that gives them a little more flexibility on pricing.
Yeah, but it's a different market that wants a cheaper price rather than a more expensive price. I mean, they could price this thing at $350, and Nintendo fans would eat it up. Right.
But
everybody would buy it, but the people that don't really care too much about Nintendo stuff, that they're kind of trying to target again, I think.
Yeah,
like
the Wii U has kind of told us like the limits to you know, like just the Nintendo constituency. Yeah, because it's got are some issues with the software library being kind of duplicative with 3DS to some extent. You know, you could argue that once they decided to move on from it, especially, but you know, like that, it's not as like unique relative to the handheld branch as previous consoles and stuff, but it has great games, and Nintendo fans are aware of this, and a lot of them have got it, and you see how far that gets you. You know, you've got to reach out further than that, and that's where the price pressure really comes into play.
So I think we should probably move to emails. So we are going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and do an indeterminate number of emails quickly. So stay tuned. And we're back with your Switch to listener mail. I am.
Let's kill this. Yeah, this is the last episode. This is happening. Like,
yeah. No,
anyway,
it's not.
Last episode, I'm not editing this one, unfortunately. But any future edits by me, all these switching puns will be killed.
You
got to get it out of your system. You know what I mean?
We got Breath of the Wild out of our system, right?
Listen, here in America, we don't really care about the pun police. I know it's in Canada, you know, everything is controlled, socialism and all that.
That's the language police.
But you know what?
Fuck
the pun police, that's what I'm saying.
Quebec, yes.
Yep. Puns are only allowed if they also come in French in Quebec, John.
Exactly.
Which makes it very difficult to make puns. So, this is a weird episode. All right. So, first email, Guillaume.
Oh. Yes. So, Nick from Chicago writes a lot of questions, but I picked part of it for this kind of short thunder round. AAA games, as we all know, are getting bigger and bigger in install size. Does Nintendo need to just match the 500 gigabyte starter size of the PS4 XB1 in order to keep pace? Skyrim Remastered takes 15.4 gigabytes according to the Xbox Store, and NBA 2K17 takes a whopping 47.66 gigabytes of more storage than the Wii U biggest model launched with. What should Nintendo's solution for the storage be? So I picked this part of Nick's question because it's a very good question. And,
it is.
Yep.
So Emily Rogers on Twitter and, well, online has been right with her predictions, with her, you know, the rumors that she was sharing. She was right on a lot of things. And one of the things that she's shared is that the NX, or the Switch, has 32 gigs of built-in internal storage, which apparently would not be enough for NBA 2K17. So I'm
pump down the jams.
Yeah, how is this gonna work? Like we've seen that the base station has USB ports. I'm guessing that you can hook up an external hard drive like you can to the Wii U. But then does that mean that when you're playing a game off the hard drive, you have to be docked? You know. Or does it mean that the game is somehow transferred every time that you dock it?
Oh, auto fridge cleans the internal storage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No!
But that would be kind of I don't know. Like Nintendo would have to have like an icon on the screen, like don't fucking touch the NX right now because I'm transferring, you know, an entire game on it.
I would hope
don't play
that
during
it's
a storm.
I would hope that it's SD. And I mean, at some point, SD cards are just going to keep getting bigger, and they're already pretty big. Like you can make some pretty huge SD cards, and I want
that is also part of the rumors, SD card support.
Right, and so that's probably the answer, is that you could do a USB drive, but if you want to have the game with you on the go, then you probably need to put an SD card in it. And I know there are like 512 gigabyte SD cards. They're not cheap, but they're not super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the 3DS is already there, essentially. But
right, and yeah. We've seen the game carts, like the game uses little kind of 3DS-like game cartridges. And I'm sure that they're going to be able to contain a lot more than a 3DS cartridge.
Oh, yeah,
but
they
the thing
have to.
Is, if the NX is a home console, that means home console-size patches. So even if you buy your game physically in order to save space, you might run out of room really freaking fast.
Yeah.
So this is a concern.
It is. Oh,
yeah,
totally.
It is.
But I mean, they may be just banking on SD getting cheaper and cheaper and bigger and bigger. So looking at it right now, a 512 is pretty pricey. It's a pretty expensive outlay to get a 512 SD card, but in a year, it won't be. It'll be cheaper, and then in a year still from there, there'll probably be 1 terabyte SD cards, and they'll be cheaper still. Now, the nice part is that we may not need to install as much if you have the game, because a lot of games have mandatory installs even if you have the disc.
Mm-hmm.
We might not need to mess around with that so much because they are going with cards, and they should have much faster read speeds than a disc, which obviously has to find spots on the disc to read from. So we may come out somewhat ahead in some places and somewhat behind in some others, but it's definitely a risk. I mean, you're right. There is challenge here.
Yeah, I really wonder about, you know, certain games. I mean, because there's so much space on the PS4, Xbox One, and stuff like that. I mean, there's some games like most first person shooters are gargantuan. They're 50 gigs after you have all the downloads and everything. I mean, they're massive, and they just don't care. They're installed on consoles that have tons of space.
I wonder if there's some stuff they can do to make it so it's not so bad.
Well, yeah, they could, but will they do that for the NX?
Or will third parties even want to deal with that, you know?
Yeah.
Because in some cases, when a game gets patched, you're re-downloading the entire game, and that really sucks when you've got a bandwidth download cap. But it will suck even more if you're stuck with limited storage space. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, if Nintendo makes it easy, I mean, they could build tools to say, hey, here's how you maximize, you know, packing your game. I would point you, and this is going to seem like a really fucking random poll, but I was actually reading about this a while ago. Back in the, you know, like the early 90s piracy scene for, you know, like Amstrad stuff and other like Commodores, mm-hmm. these cracking groups that would break the security on them would basically find ways to really just pack the game down. And they would squeeze like four games into a single disc when the original release took like three floppies
mm-hmm.
for one game.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right.
So like and they built tools to do it. And ultimately, eventually it just turned into an arms race of like, I can squeeze four games onto this disc that each one took three discs on its own.
Yep.
And what we might see is Nintendo's built tools to handle this. I would hope they did.
Well, yeah, and I mean, of the worst games, it's uncompressed audio as well because they just don't give a shit.
Yeah. Oh, here's some flack. It's like, well, I don't need 100 gigabytes of game audio. Like, you can give me MP3s. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
But why would Bethesda bother when they don't have to bother on the Sony and Microsoft machines?
Well, it's basically, if it's so easy that it's not worth worrying about, if Nintendo says, hey, here is a tool, it will let you compress your assets and decompress them as needed, they might say, oh, well, that's relatively easy. It's worth the extra effort to get the marginal sales we could pick up by being on this system.
Yeah, well, again, I kind of doubt Nintendo's ability to do that just because whatever the problem was, like we never even got DLC for games like Injustice, Gods Among Us. And I have to imagine that there was something about Nintendo's policies or tools or the way that they did DLC that Warner Brothers did not like. And so they were like, well, you know what? We're not offering the Wii U version DLC.
Yep.
I mean, my counter to that would be, look at the size of Nintendo's games. Like, when you download Super Mario 3D World, it's actually really small. It's kind of startlingly small.
I will point you to Tropical Freeze.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. Damn big. Yeah.
Tropical Freeze is a weird fucking game, but
it's impressive how small 3D World is. I think it'd fit on a GameCube disc. I think it's actually that small or something ridiculous like that. But yeah, it's different games. You know, I mean, even from Nintendo, certainly ones that they've published. You know, Bayonetta 2 is pretty fat. For instance, it would work for some games, you know, with certain kind of aesthetic choices and all that kind of stuff, but not for others.
Right. But I would think that if this is something that they've at least spent time thinking about, and that as a consequence of that, they must have a plan. They must have a plan for dealing with this.
Oh, yeah. Like, hey. I think I'm fairly confident Nintendo, you know, will have worked around all the issues to a point that they're happy with. I do think there's legitimate reason to be concerned for what that might mean for others.
I mean, you could say the same thing for Wii U. But it was kind of a shit show in that regard.
But see, here's the thing. I never walked away at any point on Wii U and said, man, Nintendo's got a plan for this thing. The whole time it felt weird. Like, we talked about it. Yeah. Johnny and I were both at that E3. We both talked about, like, all right, what the fuck did we just do?
But, I mean, coming off the Wii, I mean, the internal storage was always a problem with the Wii. And they're like, okay, well, we're just not going to do anything about that with the Wii U. We're just going to exacerbate the problem.
No, they did solve it for the Wii U. Hard drive. It takes the external hard drive. You're good to go. I mean, but that's...
I mean, that's not really a solution.
I mean, what's the other option? So, like, it's everything is going to have the same drive space on it, but eventually you may run out. Like...
Yeah, but I mean,
unless they wanted to make it
the solution
swappable.
Is actually putting a good amount of drive space in there, like that you can actually use for several games, not just, you know.
I mean,
yes, you could put several games on the Wii U, drive, depending on what those games were.
Right. I mean, you're right to a point. I think that ultimately they said I think they reached the same conclusion that they're probably going to reach with the SD cards, is that the price of USB hard drives is just plummeted. So at some point, it's probably more cost effective to let people buy their own than to have us try to put one in here and get the same drive in it for the entire console lifespan.
Cost effective for Nintendo, not cost effective for me.
Well, only if they're willing to have, only if they had been willing to absorb the cost of putting that drive in there versus increasing the price of the hardware. Mm-hmm. Like if they were to say that, okay, we'll give you 100 gigs, we'll give you 200 gigs, but we're going to, you know, raise the price by a consummate amount based on the resources that that costs for us, then you probably wouldn't have come out too much ahead.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I put 500 gigs on that thing and I paid like $20.
Yeah. I mean, I would just be fine with with large SD card support. Just don't Vita me, bro. That's all I ask.
Oh, and I don't.
don't
Vita me, bro.
Don't Vita me, bro.
Even worse. I've seen that on a shirt somewhere.
Yeah,
I'm sure you have.
It's even worse than getting Tyson, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm confident that we are not going to be looking at a proprietary memory card format. Now, for the carts, obviously, that have the games on them, that's different. But for, you know, their storage, it'll be SD because it's always been SD. It might be micro SD or some bullshit like that, but it'll be SD. Because why invent your own? Like, seriously, why? If you can encrypt it and handle piracy, why go through the process of manufacturing your own when you're probably not really going to make much money on it? Mm. And just say, it's an SD port. We paid the SD port license. Go nuts. And you can just not worry about it. And it'll be SD. You'll be able to throw your $200 500 gigabyte SD card there and forget about it for a while. But yeah, I mean, eventually, yeah, if games continue to balloon and this thing gets everything, like I've heard people saying like, man, a terabyte's not enough for my PS4. And I think, what the fuck is that? How is that not enough?
Well, what do you? It's just not.
It's like not.
Every game is being super wasteful with the space, and
yeah,
you
mean,
just install automatically. Yeah. Anyway,
it's like where have we reached as an industry where it's like, yeah, I'll drop 200 gigs on your hard drive. I don't give a crap. But
not really that. It's just that every game is 50 gigs, and you know, just do the math on that, and you reach a terabyte pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If you have any, anyway, if you care about buying games. Like, you know,
if you each terabyte in a decent number of games, but yeah, to your point, yes, you will get to a terabyte, but okay, maybe you have to
also around. And the thing is that just the one last comment I'll make is that with those, now that you won't have the problem on Nintendo consoles necessarily, is you have the PS Plus stuff and the Xbox Live
right.
Gold, where you can just get like two or three games a month free. And just download them. So that
does
make the problem a bit
worse. That's really what kills
the
PS4 hard drives and the Xbox One hard drives.
Yes.
But if we did have that, it would probably be Nintendo stuff, which would not necessarily be as we've talked about, would not necessarily be as bloat intensive. Mm-hmm. But we don't know this, but it's entirely possible, as I think you alluded to, that there could just be, I want this game on the hard drive. I know I will not be able to play it when I'm out and about. I'm okay with that. And so maybe you have the games that you're more likely to play on the go on the device itself and whatever game you're playing right now. Like right now, I am playing this game. I want it on the device.
Yeah, that kind of fridge cleaning, I don't mind.
Yeah, and like these are like virtual console games that I may just want to pick up and play at any time. Because if you had like 128 gigabyte SD card in there, you could have pretty much all the virtual console on it and you'd be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of games to take around with you. And you might have enough space for one big game. And then if you have a hard drive attached to it, that's just like everything else. Like maybe that's the approach. And then you wouldn't have to pay $300 for a terabyte SD card. But you could have, you know, a terabyte plus of storage and just continue on that way. We suck at lightning round.
Yeah, I think we've covered this.
John, next email.
All right. Let me just pull it up here. All right. Adam writes, with so many phones coming with waterproofing, will the Nintendo Switch be safe in a bathtub?
No.
I don't know. I think it would be safe in a bathtub because most people wouldn't use it in a bathtub. Would it be safe in a bathtub with me? Remains to be seen.
No one is safe in a bathtub with you, John.
This is very true.
We don't define safety based around, well, no one would be dumb enough to do this. Like... This car is safe when driven drunk because no one would be stupid enough to do that. Well, yes, people are stupid enough to do that, and it's not safe, unsafe at any speed, as it were.
It's like Switch. We're going now. We're going to record the safety word. The safety word is bathtub. So when I bring it near the bathtub, 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 turn off, and it shuts itself down. I hope it has that feature. Adam's
water detecting features.
Adam's other question is, where are the camera and microphone on the Switch? This seems like a massive departure for Nintendo.
Ooh.
We don't even have touch or motion controls confirmed. Camera and microphone.
Again, that was part of the rumors from Amelia Rogers. She said that there was no camera or mic on the NX itself. Now, that doesn't mean there's none anywhere. But, yeah,
right.
we haven't seen anything like that in the unit itself.
Nope. And that could just be a whole, like, let's just cut weight. Just anything that we're not going
to
use.
Trying to cut costs if they're trying to hit, you know, we had the price discussion in the last segment. If they're trying to hit a particular threshold or they're just doing nickel and dime in their way down to it, it could happen. We've seen them do stuff like get rid of AC adapters and all that, you know what I mean? They will, even if it seems like something wouldn't cost a whole hell of a lot, you know, they have cut stuff. In the past, and you know, obviously the cost of all the bells and whistles in the gamepad was sort of credited as being a bit of a weight dragging down the Wii U's chances in the market. So
Right, and I can't really remember using the microphone in the Wii U gamepad all that much outside of WarioWare. Like again, mostly the use must have been like blowing into the mic, and when that's the only use that people can find for a mic. Maybe you don't need the mic.
Yeah.
Wii U chat, Guillaume.
Yeah. You well, spoke, and I mean, really, I spoke with you over that one.
That's true.
So. Yeah,
we spoke
with a disembodied voice from a Yoshi. Thank you.
Well, as opposed to what you're doing now, like you've only ever known me as a disembodied voice, and presumably only will ever know me.
But there was not a Yoshi involved. For all we know, that could have been the Yoshi talking.
That has been my Skype.
I'm staring at it. This is Skype.
Yeah, my Skype avatar is a Yoshi. So yeah.
That is a two-dimensional Yoshi.
Yeah. Okay. Now the one thing
this
that they
was
haven't
obviously a three-dimensional object
that they haven't addressed is headset support. They really haven't mentioned that. I mean, that could remove the need for a mic if they would actually support normal headsets.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a microphone jack on it. We've seen that.
Oh, yeah, so
the
headphone jack, you mean.
Yeah, it has a headphone jack, but not
a
very mic jack necessarily.
That could be a dual-purpose one, because they do have, I mean, that is fairly common on phones circa 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a dual-purpose, and you could just plug in any headphone-microphone combo into it and be good to go. That's probably the right way to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for online gaming and stuff like that, like, I've always kind of missed being able to use just a proper headset or just a headset off the shelf.
But if you were playing on the TV, how would you do it? Because the thing's over there and you're over here. So it would have to be wireless.
Yeah. Yep.
But maybe they're just going to say, whatever, your Bluetooth headset's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We don't know much about the dock either. We don't know what the dock has in it. The dock maybe has wireless support for headsets or something like that. We don't even
know. Basically what they've said is the dock is for charging and connecting to your TV.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's it. That's what it's for.
Yeah,
there's
been some speculation about whether that's where the NFC reader is because of the conspicuous placement of the Amiibo in the 3-minute video was next to the dock.
Right. Yep.
Maybe they too speak to disembodied Yoshis as they play. Disembodied voices from Yoshis as they play their NX experiences. Their Switch experience.
There was a Yoshi there, I believe, alongside
there was.
Super Mario line Amiibo.
Yep. Did you have any more, John? Are you good?
No, I'm good.
All right, Greg.
So MASB writes, to Messrs. Guy, Greg, and J&J, a.k.a. the Brothers Lindemann.
Yes. Absolutely fucking not.
Not the Brothers Jones. The Brothers Lindemann.
What happened to the parents' fertility in the intervening years as well? I want to know about that scenario. Today, Nintendo ended the longest suspense story in the games industry since James' journey to finish The Last Remnant by unveiling the NX, now called Nintendo Switch.
Why did this just turn into, like, long play griefing, the segment?
You did that. I edited all those episodes. It was a saga.
I lived those episodes. Don't you tell me about it being a saga.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know,
I'm the one who got fucking shoes in the mail.
Yeah, you shared it, is the point. It was not a private saga. Amid clips of stylish 20 and 30 somethings in San Francisco living in apartments,
I stole from this email. I
apologize. They can't possibly afford. We got some interesting looks at the system and at games that may be Wii U ports, mock-ups, or original games. I like the look of the system, though the ending of the D-pad tradition still pains me. Nintendo definitely took care to show the basics of how the system works and that it is new. The name Switch is descriptive, but I wonder if the name will do them any favours in the marketplace. In the movie Switchback, Arlie Ermey's character says, "Once you've heard the truth, everything else is just cheap whiskey." So, was the Switch presentation like the finest scotch for you, or a water... I don't even know how to say this last bit. You'll have to help me out. A watered-down strawberry what?
What, daiquiri?
Yeah, daiquiri.
Daiquiri, yeah, there you go. So I don't know my booze, I'm afraid. With regards, Julio was robbed. He was. It's mugged, I would say, actually, at the end of that game.
Yep.
So I would say that I walked away from the presentation thinking it was more than I was expecting because I put on kind of a minimalist, like, they're going to show us hardware. Reggie's going to go, "Hi, Bill. Bill, why are you on the camera?" And then they're going to get like, "We'll talk about the Switch more in 3 weeks. We'll see you there." But instead, we got a pretty well-produced, like, it very much reminded me of the Pokemon Go presentation. That first one, trailer they put out.
Yeah, which that showed stuff that they haven't been able to bring to market yet, right? You know, it was very much like a kind of concept, you know, like this is what we kind of hope to be able to do in the game.
Right. Obviously, the product is farther along than Pokemon Go was when they showed
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like this stuff, kind of as MASAB says there, like there's a certain amount of mock up kind of going on, but you know, it's going to be more representative of what we're gonna get.
But it seems like the reaction's been super positive. I mean, it's been dominant on social media conversation. It's been all over the news. They've gotten a ton of views, and I haven't really seen much in the way of negative response.
Well, I mean, the one negative thing that MASOB kind of talked about there, the D-pad that we've touched on before as well. I will say, you know, obviously due to the modular kind of nature of those controllers, I mean, it seems like it's the kind of thing that you could easily have, you know, an optional classic controller type of thing where you could snap a more traditional D-pad to the device, Joy-Con Pro, perhaps. Good Lord. But you had a pro-style controller, you know, a standalone controller that we saw in the imagery that did have a traditional D-pad for when you played on the TV.
Yes.
I agree with MSNB on that. You know, it kind of wounds me a little bit to see that not as standard, but... You know, I think it probably won't be a big deal. They love selling you accessories. I mean, they didn't even get to sell that many accessories with Wii U because much stuff was still compatible. So, yeah, I think we're going to get that with a vengeance on this.
I wonder if, even if Nintendo doesn't create, like, custom D-pad ones. I bet like Hori does at some point.
Oh yeah,
like,
hey, third party.
Here's the Hori D-pad Switch replacement, and then you just snap that in, you're good to go.
Yeah,
there is something dark and sinister about Nintendo creating a system where it's like everything is modular. Like we've seen that when we give them an inch, they'll take about the distance between here and the sun. So who knows what nonsense they might try here?
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, to the question, do we feel like it was largely a positive response? I mean, I do, but
I mean, I feel like they managed to sidestep the typical landmines that have taken down other, you know, console, you know, unveilings, like the Xbox One, where they talked about TV and everything. Well, that's just going to get you killed on the internet,
right?
You know, they kept it focused on games, which was very smart, and they really didn't go too much outside the lines on anything. They said, yep, it's a game console first and foremost. Here are the games. Here's the way it operates. You know, it was just very much like very games focused. So I think they were very smart.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we touched on this before, but, you know, I do feel like because so much of the information was largely out there, it took away the possibility for it to like surprise or anything in that sense. So it was almost more about, okay, assuming that's what it's going to be, how are they going to message it and how well are they going to do it? How are they going to kind of dress it up and wrap it up? And, you know, and so far, you know, it's just again, small sliver of what needs to be done, but so far I think they, you know, I like the fact that it's focused, and I do. I think the name works for me. I think it's less, you know, sort of muddled and more kind of intuitive than we've had from them lately. So I think that's a positive. But you know, and for anybody wondering, if they don't remember, Arnie Ermey is the salty drill sergeant from. Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. A man well known for swearing on screen, basically.
Yeah.
I don't really... I don't know. I've seen mostly positive comments on Twitter, but I've mostly curated my feed to be free of overly caustic people. present company excluded, I suppose. But, I don't know. Like, I don't have a problem with a Switch name. I think it probably goes along well, like in other languages and stuff. Like, it's not too complicated. Yeah, I don't know.
I am trying to say it in Japanese, and I'm struggling a little bit. But it's. I mean, it's not miserable. It's not just completely unusable. So yeah, it's simple though. It's not polysyllabic. It's two. So, it's not a big, long name. It's not convoluted. It's a real word. It's something you can brand
pretty
quickly.
Also, it's not a real world, a read word misspelled, which is always annoying.
Yeah, that's yeah. I took my slam on marketers being worse than dictators. We is, again, a fantastic example of that. Yeah,
it might be slightly an exaggeration.
Nope.
You say? No.
Okay. Nope. Nintendo. Remember, Nintendo of Europe's PR company also did PR for The Last Dictator of Europe. There's a reason. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
Yep. Europe's Last Dictator, also a co-client of their European PR branch. So, just saying. Anyway.
Truths revealed.
Some people were joking that kids under the tree will find like that their grandparents got them an RF adapter, like because it's an RF switch for, you know, old Nintendo systems. But I don't think, I think the chances of that happening are pretty low.
Yeah, in terms of the reaction to it, I think probably the most interesting part was reading a kind of roundup of analyst reaction, because you did see kind of some variation. Like, one kind of took the, you know, to go back to the ASAP's line about the 20-somethings in their apartments, it was like, okay, you know, this is targeting millennials and this kind of stuff, would appreciate the on-the-go aspect. And then immediately below that in this roundup of analyst opinion was someone who was convinced that it was targeting the preteen and teenage market. So I guess it says that it's a bunch of different ways you can read this stuff, even if you are paid to do that.
Fantastic. That's by the way, that gives you evidence that nobody knows what they're talking about in this industry. Even us.
Especially us.
Especially Bethesda. So this one actually came from Twitter, because I had to put out the call to email us, which led to people tweeting at me, because this is email. So maybe I'm just encouraging them. But David actually has three that kind of all go together. Are people going to bitch and moan when they want to charge $30 to $40 for a handheld experience only? Which, whatever that means. Will fans demand handheld games like Pokemon must be done as I guess he means done up to the style of home console games? And will Atlas or Square Enix or Level 5 want to release handheld focused games on the Switch console? It might help that I read those in the order he sent them to me instead of making up my own order. But basically, it seems to be the thrust of his question is, if Square Enix wanted to make something on the scale of Bravely Default for Switch, would people be upset that it doesn't look like an HD game?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Again, I go back to my example of the comments section on the PlayStation blog.
God, no.
When people receive indie games as their quote-unquote free games for PS Plus. Like, there will always be people complaining about that.
Yeah,
there will
but
always
I mean,
be people I who guess... don't understand why not every game doesn't look as good as Uncharted 4.
But the thing is, why doesn't every game look as good as Uncharted 4? Until you can answer that question, they're always right.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing about this is kind of is the Japanese example, isn't it? Because this whole
right.
system is interesting in terms of, as we've said, you know, PS4 is, you know, it's sort of things seem to be moving along with that, but it's not been a raging success there, you know, compared to other markets. You haven't seen a lot of the biggest Japanese developers like kind of moving up and, you know, doing these like really lavish sort of games for that yet necessarily. So, you know, it's like, would this system... you know, in some ways, maybe if it's not as powerful as PS4, could it appeal more to those developers? We're like, well, it doesn't have to be some, like, you know, quote unquote AAA mega budget thing to compete in this
right.
space. But then that raises the question of, okay, well, it, how do you handle the fact that, you know, some games might look, you know, a certain kind of production value and then others might look quite different, especially if they're targeted more at the portable part, where even though I assume, you know, it still would have a much higher resolution than the current, you know, the 3DS currently has. So yeah, it's a tricky one to answer, but I would say I can imagine Japan, which I do believe is, you know, remains the sort of their priority here, in to some extent, even though obviously the other markets taken together are much, much bigger.
Yes.
It's I do think Japan would be more accepting of that kind of diversity, you know, because the biggest games in Japan in terms of mainstream popularity are not so bound up with crazy high production values as they are in the West. You know, when you think of you know, Monster Hunter and things like that, you know, like DQ9 being such a huge hit on DS, you know, that was it was not it was like, so it wasn't correlated with being like, you know, the on the best hardware
graphical powerhouse.
Yeah, it wasn't on the best hardware or you know, it was more the aesthetic you know, sort of your choices or, you know, the classic gameplay styles that they like. So I think I could see it not being a particularly big issue in Japan. How much of an issue it is elsewhere, you know, yeah, again, I think I know I've said this a lot in this show, but I really feel like that is going to be the trickier part, is, you know, kind of it competing against the PS4 and Xbox One outside of Japan, because they're actually really popular outside of Japan, and,
right.
you know, all that stuff, it seems like a much steeper hill to climb elsewhere.
Well, and I think that the challenge is also... there's always going to be some people who are contrarian or want more out of a given game, but if they price the games indiscriminately of the production value, so if let's say we get Bravely Default 3, because for whatever reason, Square Enix put a cliffhanger at the end of Bravely Default 2,
and also, well, it was the recently they kind of hinted at something.
Yeah, they did hint at something.
Yeah, your news has been scarce on this recently, but, you know, it was the fourth birthday of the original Bravely game,
right?
And they said they might have some things to say of
right.
Non-committal things.
But if they did do that, and it looked like a nice 3DS game, like it looked, you know, higher res models, higher res art. Obviously, that alone increases the production value of the game.
Yeah,
but. Let's say they priced it at $60, then I think people are absolutely right to go like, what the F? Why is this a $60 game? So I think the Square Enix tax and the Atlas tax especially, there may need to be some price sensitivity that they didn't have to have on the 3DS because
I agree with that, but I would also say, you know, I've been impressed as things have gone along that 3DS, you know, has had quite variable pricing, you know, even of
sure.
games that come out in boxes. You know, obviously digital, you know, the digital store stuff, you know, it had to move on from the weird sort of predefined slots that they had for DSiWare. I mean, that was really silly. But you know, like then you get to full retail games on the eShop and all that. You do see, certainly over here anyway, obviously I've not had direct experience of the eShop elsewhere, but, you know, quite diverse pricing. You know, for instance, Rhythm Heaven Megamix finally came out here this week, and that is substantially cheaper than something, I think it's £10 cheaper than something like DQ7. It might even be like £15 cheaper than Pokemon's going to be, you know. So there's some flexibility there, and yeah, they might need to even be more flexible.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Nintendo. I'm worried about specifically Atlas and Square Enix, who are notorious for saying, like, well, we're on 3DS. We don't have to worry about how this looks compared to pricing on other platforms.
Well, I think they'll just keep doing what they're already doing and just pack, like, 4 tracks on a CD with the game and, you know, like, some sort of...
call it the deluxe poster. Edition.
Yeah, call it the deluxe edition. And
Yomawari deluxe edition, $80.
Yeah, and, like, the fans will buy it and... other people will wait for the sale.
Just pack a scarf and anything, they certainly,
Atlas certainly do it, like discounting their games digitally. Yeah, I mean,
they sure do.
It's those games don't remain $40-$50 forever.
No, that's the one publisher you can bank on. The digital version is going to be the one that's going to drop in price in the future.
Just do think they have to be conscious of it more, because there will be games at that same price point that will look more complicated and will make their selling proposition a little bit more difficult. It's an additional, if you are saying we are going to move our handheld development to Switch, which I think right now it's premature to talk about third parties doing that, because we don't know what Nintendo's plans for 3DS are, and those companies probably
and again, it's going to depend to some fair extent on how well Switch is going to do. Right. We talked about the sort of analogy between DS and GBA before, you know, how, you know, they were ready to support the GBA for quite a while longer than they actually did because the DS was successful. Had things gone differently, you know, it could have been that GBA carried on for many more years, maybe more like what Game Boy did, you know, how long that cycle went on for.
And we talked about earlier, they may put out form factors in the future that are more handheld appropriate, and there's a lot we don't know about what Nintendo's, you know, 5-year plan is.
Contingency plans. That's I mean, I guess, you know, one plan, if you want to call it that, might be that they get out of dedicated hardware altogether. I mean, I know they talk a good game about being reticent to do that. But, you know, the mobile stuff is happening. That is a strategy. They're going to start making money from that. You know, there might be a certain amount of pressure from investors and stuff. I mean, that is a possibility. You know, it's not something I relish by any means. You know, it's a rather unpleasant possibility to consider, but it is one.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking a wait and see here, and I would guess that a lot of the publishers who make 3DS games probably are as well. And they're probably talking to each other, and they're probably trying to get a feel for what their competition is going to do. And I think we might see some weird pricing erraticness at the start, especially if Atlas is there like, hey, here's a port of Etrian Untold 3 because it's coming out at the same time, which we're probably about due for another Etrian game. It's been over a week.
The Etrian stuff is to go back to the point of the whole, like, not have the screen not being visible when it's in the dock.
I just cited it because
I know,
we're
but it's kind of, that does look, you know, that we've got the concerns over touch, and then, you know, the fact that looks like, you know, you're not going to have any kind of two screen gameplay, even though you've kind of got two screens with one in the unit and then the TV. Like, that doesn't seem like it would happen, which is sad.
What if you can put the Joy controllers on the long way and then hold it like a DS?
What if
split it?
Yeah, the Joy-Con. Like, I don't know what crazy nonsense are we willing to talk about on this thing. I imagine that everybody, including Nintendo, is in somewhat of a wait and see mode, and we'll figure it out as we go. And we'll probably see some games come out, and even we'll go like, "What the fuck are you thinking with that price point?" And there will be some games that can get away with it, and there will be some games that can't. And the ones that can't will come down pretty quickly, and people will adjust as we feel for what the market is. You know, eventually we'll have a good understanding of what Switch consumers are interested in and what they're willing to pay for, and where they're willing to go on some games. So right now,
Atlas is just going to include a 12-page booklet of character art, and that will soothe their fans.
It won't even be character art. It'll just be art exports from the game. You assholes.
I'm not a believer in pack-in bonuses and stuff.
I mean, they're fine, but yeah, Atlas uses them to justify prices sometimes, and they'd be better off just giving me the discount, but whatever.
Yep.
So we are at our time limit for this episode because we are trying to get it out the day of recording. So that is going to do it for email this week because we are about to switch this show off. Oh, I did it.
Yeah, well, enjoy it while it lasts.
This episode is going to be The Switch Puns Cometh, I think is the title.
Yep.
But if you want to send us your email, browse on over to NintendoWorldReport.com. And you can go, actually, why am I going to give you that address? Well, I'll just give you your real email address. RFN@NintendoWorldReport.com. I was thinking about giving you the address. You can use the mail form. But it's in the article if you want to use that. I haven't mentioned that in a while. Hey, and
you can switch between either one, ultimately.
You can. Retroactive is coming because we switched it out of this week. And that just turned out to be fortuitous for us. We just really weren't ready to talk about it. But next week, we will be talking about LEGO City Undercover for Wii U. If you start now, it may load by the time we get there. So go ahead and switch it on. And we will be reading comments from the talkback thread. So if you've got thoughts about this game, go ahead and post them there. And they might show up on the show. Gentlemen, that's going to do it for this week. Greg, what is our music to take us home?
I went a couple of different places thinking about music for this week. Originally, it would have been LEGO Undercover music. Then there was kind of the Halloween thing. But with the big announcement and all that, I thought we needed a new fanfare for the system. So we've got another piece of music from Super Mario 3D World, which is Switch Scramble Circus, which I think pretty much accurately kind of describes this whole run-up to this announcement, really, that it encapsulates the kind of craziness that led up to all this, all the rumours and all that. And I think it's the sort of the counterpoint to the siren now. We do know what it is, and everything's okay.
We've all made it to the other side. And on that, it's time for us to sign off. I almost made a switch pun. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.